Good morning. It's good to stand before you again. I pray Brother Tim gets better really quick. I know it from what it sounds like he's not doing well at all, so my prayers are with him. But I am happy that I get to stand before you again. It's been a while, and so last time we were here, we had plans to move to Oklahoma and preach. Well, the Lord had other plans for us. That didn't work out very well. So I was offered the job, accepted the job, but I couldn't find a teaching job to go with it. So that's kind of what brought us back here. I'm great to be here with you today. I know when he called me yesterday or texted me yesterday, I was glad I listened to that great Northeast Arkansas preacher that baptized me. And he said, when you become a preacher, you want to have go-to verses and go-to lessons. And so this is my go-to verse. Okay, these are some of my go-to verses, and I'll share some others with you when we end today. And so when we look at this passage, I want to concentrate on these two verses before we get to our main point in our lesson today. But this is our text for the day, for us to think about as we move forward into this lesson. So two goals, and I'm not going to read it again as it was just read, but two things are mentioned in this that we sometimes do and maybe forget that it's not as serious as we do it. And that's number one, we make plans. That verse 13 says, today or tomorrow we'll go to such and such city. We make plans, and I do that myself. I'm starting year 21 of teaching. I'm making retirement plans. I'm pretty young, but I dream of being able to spend more time with my wife and do more things that I've never got to do before. Politics, maybe. I don't know. Someday. We make college plans. I went to college a long time. Still paying for it. Went to college. I make retirement plans. We make financial plans. We have to. Or the Lord teaches us that we have to. We have to be stewards of our money. We help our children make plans. Hopefully they listen, and hopefully we can give them sound advice. The other one there, it talks about time. It says it's like a vapor that appears and disappears. I don't know about you, but the older I get, I realize how time is just swiftly going by. We have this hallway, and you may have this. I used to think of going to my grandmother's house, there were pictures everywhere. We now have those pictures hanging in our house. And it's like they're all on this wall, and I find myself as I'm walking down the hall looking this way. Because I don't look at all those little pictures of those little boys that no longer live with me. Time fades away. I tried playing full court basketball again not too long ago. Okay, I used to play, I used to coach. My body didn't like me for a few weeks, maybe months after I played. Time is swiftly going by. But the question I'm going to look at today is that one right there. For what is your life? So my title today of my lesson, if this were my last sermon, now I'm not coming here thinking I'm going to do a bad enough job, you're not going to have me do this again. This comes from a preacher that I like to read and study every once in a while, and he got diagnosed with cancer. And the first thing he did when he was diagnosed with cancer was he wrote a goodbye letter to his wife and daughters. Think about that. We sometimes take time for granted. We take life for granted. And it could go in the blink of an eye. What would you do if that happened to you? If you found out that your life may be ending very, very soon? He wrote a thank you letter. And so from that letter, I have 4 points for you today. Just four things I want to take away from that letter that he gave advice to his wife and daughters that I have taken. This is why this is a go-to lesson for me. I find I preach this about every 3 years because I get asked to go somewhere new about every 3 years. And so I brought it back. And so it helps me to relook at this, to refocus. Because, you know, we all go through rough times. We all get bitter on life. We all have things that happen we don't agree with. And it's good to refocus. It's good to understand why we're here in this world. That this world is not our home, as we sing sometimes. We're just a passing through. Is that how we truly live? And so that's how what he was thinking as he wrote this letter to his young daughters and to his wife. So the first point that I want to take from his letter is, if this were my last sermon, if I realized my life is about over, I would encourage you to remember how uncertain and brief life really is. We just talked about that. It's easy to take life for granted. However, we need to remember each and every day we wake up, it may be our last. I was just reading something. I don't like social media too much anymore. It's great for some things, but some people take advantage of it. But I was just reading yesterday where someone I know, her husband, got struck last week by a car and he was killed. Last week. We've had disease in our life. I lost my grandmother to Alzheimer's, one of the worst things I've ever had to go through. We lost my sweet mother-in-law to cancer. I had to watch my mom battle cancer. My wife, my best friend, battle cancer. It's hard to watch that. But I want to show you this picture. You think, who's this? This is one of my former students. Her name's Claire. I'm not a bracelet guy, but I wear this bracelet every day. I look at it. I'm not even a blue and pink kind of guy. And it's blue and pink. I like pink, and I don't like blue, unfortunately. Claire, in 2014, lost her life. That picture with the ocean in the background was the last picture her family ever took of her. They went on vacation. She ate something that got her sick. She went to a children's hospital. And the parents had to sit there and watch her pass away. The doctors did not know what to do. She had a strain of E. coli that doctors still today don't know what to do about. The family's created an organization. I helped them with that organization where they're trying to find a cure for what she died of. They don't even know what to do still today. She would have graduated high school last year. Look at that face in that beach picture. She's smiling. She had no idea once she got on the plane that day and came home that would be the last picture ever taken of her. Life is brief. I show you this picture not to be morbid, but to realize we sometimes think I'm getting older. I used to remember as a young person, I never thought about death unless somebody around me was dying. But when I look at her picture, or when I look at that bracelet, especially when I take life for granted or my day's going bad, I look at this bracelet and remember how short life really is. Life is short. Turn to 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 24. Many approach life as it's just going to go on forever. I'm guilty myself. Very guilty myself. I want to see my boys get married. My wife and I are wondering if that's ever going to happen, especially with our oldest. I want to be there to watch them on that great day. I'm getting close to wanting grandkids. My wife passed wanting them. I can't imagine having little ones that are mine, that are from my family. I mentioned I want to retire someday and travel with my wife. Things we haven't really got to do much because of health and other issues. But I also have to realize every day when I wake up, I may breathe my last breath. I met someone I knew this last week as I was around in the town. She's a former teacher. Her husband went to sleep. He never woke up. Just a month ago. Died of a heart attack. In his sleep. Peter tells us that all flesh is as grass, and all the glory of man is the flower of the grass. The grass withers and the flowers falls away. My wife and I have started trying to plant things and let them grow. We've never been very good at it. And so hopefully we're doing successful. We're being pretty successful right now, but there's just this one that doesn't want to seem to grow. It makes no sense. We're doing everything we're doing to everything else, but it just withers away. It may not make sense when you see things wither away. Our life someday will be the same. It's just going to wither away. We're just going to fade away. Something may happen to us, and we're going to go away. In Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 2, it tells us, it's better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. We're going to head back to 1 Peter here in just a minute. But we look at this verse. I remember used to reading this years ago when I was younger, thinking, we're supposed to be in mourning all the time? But you read Psalms 1 and it says, choose to be happy. We don't like to think of death. But I don't know about you, when I think of death or I see someone suffering that I love or I hear of someone who's lost a loved one or lost their own life or about to lose their own life, it makes me mourn. And when I mourn, I think about heaven. I really think about hell and how I don't want to go there. It's okay to talk about hell and think about hell. Because when we talk about it, we read about it, we think about it, we realize, I don't want to go there. I think that's what that verse is kind of talking about there. In 1 Peter chapter 2, I mentioned the song earlier. The notes on the page look like ants to me. Okay, I've learned music through just growing up in great churches, and I love to sing. I don't know, I'm not very well, but I don't do it very well, but I like to sing. One of my favorite songs is "World Is Not My Home, I'm Just a Passing Through," because it reminds me that my life is short. In 1 Peter, Peter tells us in chapter 2, verse 11, "Beloved, I beg you as sojourners, as pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lust which war against soul. When I think about pilgrims, I think of first grade. We used to, you know, put our hands down and draw turkeys and make cats. These people that came over to our world, this wasn't their home. I love my home. I love walking into my house, my little dogs shaking their tail. That's the first thing I see. My wife smiling, asking me how my day went. But luckily, I married someone that helps me realize that that's not home. I'm just there temporarily. This world is not our home. We're just a passing through. Something coming up on the screen. Sorry about that. I guess I see it, but y'all don't. Okay. Sorry, technology is wonderful these days. Apologize, bear with me. I don't need this, but when you study for hours to use this, it helps. There we go. Okay, back to normal. See if I can remember my thoughts now. Guess I need to get used to it, and I'm about to start teaching school again, and I got to remember how to teach. You know, how many of us, we travel, we go to a hotel overnight, we don't look at that picture and say, I don't like that picture, I'm going to change it. I don't know about you, but I take a blanket. I don't really usually like the blankets they have, but I take my own blanket. That's about the only thing I do. I have to sleep in their bed. I have to look at their pictures. I have to use their TV. I don't go in there with the idea I'm going to change everything because I realize I'm only there temporarily. I only pack the things I need. That's what we're here temporarily. We use the things we need. We study the things we need, and it's in the book. We live by the law. We need to spend our time, Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 20. We need to spend our time and energy in enhancing and getting ready for our eternal home. Can you imagine, and we'll talk about this in a minute, so I'm not going to say too much now, what it's going to be like to be with God? My mind can hardly go there. What it's going to be like to be with God. As I get older, I understand it a lot more. But we need to get ready for that, to spend our time and energy. Matthew 6:19 says, do not lay up for yourself treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. I understand that I don't think I've seen mothballs in a long time. But I remember growing up to the smell of mothballs. Just all these moths. We see them outside our house a lot, but my grandfather, those of y'all know I'm a history buff. I teach history. I'm a history major. But my grandfather's uniform was something I hoped to have one day. And when he passed away, there were holes all in it. Moths had taken it and destroyed it. I'm a history teacher because of my grandfather. I never grew up wanting to be a teacher. I want to be in politics. I became a teacher. Life has different plans for us. I wanted that uniform, but moths just took it. You couldn't even tell it was a uniform anymore. I remember going to work one day, my dad's business. We had an automotive place when I was going to college. And one of the cars was stolen. Still don't know where it went. It's gone. So we can kind of grasp the concept of that. Those treasures, that uniform that I wanted dearly, is gone. That car was gone. I've had other things stolen. Those things are gone. So where's our treasure at? If we realize life is uncertain, where do you put your treasure at? And young people, my treasure was college and cars and meeting the right person. I didn't spend as much time when I was younger thinking about God's Word. And I should have. Second point I want to make to you today, if you would, turn to Matthew the 16th chapter. We'll be going to Matthew chapter 16. If this were my last sermon, because my life was soon to be over, I would encourage you to remember the value of your soul. We all have personal things that we treasure. I have all my grandparents' Bibles. I have that little Bible that my son used to use. I have a bunch of history stuff that I've collected over the years because of my grandfather. I have things my boys have made all over the house. They don't look very good, but my boys made them, so they're the best thing in the world. I have my relationships. I was fortunate, blessed, to grow up with a grandmother and mother that raised me to stand here before you today. I am blessed to be married to the most beautiful person, my best friend in the world. Who, recently, when I get down, she's brought me back to realizing what it means to serve the Lord. But you know, I realized that that's not the most valuable thing I have. I love my wife dearly, and if I don't say this, she'll be mad at me. She's not the most valuable thing I have that I am fortunate enough to be a part of. My soul is. In Matthew chapter 16, verse 26, it says, "What profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man gain in exchange for his soul? All the things in the world cannot add up and equal the value of our soul." Excuse me, my allergies are getting bad today. Our soul is who and what we are. What will you give? Let's answer that question. What will we give in exchange for our soul? If we have something important, I remember growing up too, I'm showing my age. I'm an 80s kid. I love the 80s. Beware of dog signs. All over the place. That's how they protected things back then. We put things in a lock and key. And as a little kid, I was scared of dogs because of those signs, and there usually are mean dogs behind those. We put things behind lock and key, safes. We want to protect them. What are we doing to protect our soul? When's the last time we opened our Bible and read it? Or opened our phone and read our Bible? When's the last time we truly studied? How valuable is our soul to us? The soul, Genesis chapter 2, verse 7, teaches us that our soul or our spirit, which is in our bodies, is the part that made in the image of God. In Genesis chapter 2, I'll let you turn and read that, or you can read it on the screen. You know, what makes something valuable? A lot of times it's where it comes from. You know, I can go to Amazon.com and look up Bibles, and I'm looking for the translation. I'm looking at the authors. But they'll never compare it to the Bibles I have in my house. My little son, with his little fingers, couldn't even open it, used it. If I were to show you the front pages of my Bible, that's why I've never gotten... This is the third cover I had. There's a note from my son who didn't know how to spell Centerton, Arkansas. That's why I've never gotten rid of this Bible. It's been made with duct tape. I had duct tape on this thing. I don't get rid of it because of the hands that touched it. The things that are most valuable, sometimes because of the people that we get, where we get them from. Our soul comes from God. We need to never forget that. John 6 and verse 63. Our soul's eternal. It's not flesh. The flesh will fade away. Wait till you get older, young people. I used to run up and down the basketball court as good as anybody, but my knees... I can't run anymore at all. Our soul will last forever. Turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 12. At death, our souls, our spirits will return back to God. It says, "Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it." In the end, our souls, we read about, Jesus tells us in Matthew chapter 7, of the straight and narrow way or the wide path. I'm paraphrasing. Right now, we're headed down one of those paths. And if our time were to come, God forbid, as we leave today, which path are we on? It's easy right now, right? We're here with people like mine, like faith. But what happens when we go to school, or to work, or at home? My wife and I joke that we get to see the worst of each other. Is when we're comfortable at home, that's when the worst comes out, unfortunately, right? Let me encourage you to seek God with all your heart. Jesus was once asked, "What is the greatest commandment?" He said to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. Think about those three things, heart, soul, and mind. If we're giving God the heart, the soul, and the mind, there's nothing left for anyone else. Except copying that and putting God at the top. Let me remind you, as Ecclesiastes says, to fear God and keep His commandments, to value your soul. It's not a feel-good feeling. It's not how we feel about living each day. It's fearing God and keeping His commandments. That's what's truly important in life. Determined to be godly, to be like God, spiritually minded person. Bad song comes on the radio, my wife and I get really good at just turning it off. What you put in if we're not careful, will come out. Be spiritually minded. Pursue it with everything you have. Think of an athlete. I'm sorry, I speak sports. That's what I did growing up. I had to practice or I didn't get to play. Olympic athletes impress me like crazy. The training they go through just for one event. I know they do other things too, but that's their one major event. Remember to put the center, to center your heart on God, to give Him everything. And so as I think about this, it reminded me of something I came across not too long ago, preparing for another lesson. It's just a story about a general and his daughter. It says, when the general's daughter was a child, she lived in relative poverty, devoid of the common luxuries. When she grew older, she began to realize how little they had in their humble home. One day she said, "Father, why don't we have more things like other folks?" I thought that growing up. Did you? Her father said, "Get me a piece of paper." So there's a piece of paper. And a pencil. He said, "Make a dot in the center of the sheet." And he wrote above it things. Around it, he drew a circle. And he named it man. And still a larger circle, and he called it God. "Now," said the general, "I've always given things in this world a place of the little dot. I've given man the first circle and have placed God all around that, giving him my all, giving him the largest place." He asked for a second sheet of paper. He said to the daughter, "I will now place another dot at the center and name it God. The first circle will be man and the outer circle will be things." He looked at his daughter and he said, "Which will you have, daughter? God is the little dot, or God is the big circle?" The daughter said, "Put God at the center of the circle and let things always be the little dot." May things always be the little dot in our lives. Do we truly place God first? Now that looks like, I'm trying to figure out how to make that not look like eyes looking at you. Probably shouldn't have said that. It's kind of creepy. It kind of creeped me out yesterday when I was working on this. I made the dots really small because they were bigger than that. But where is our life right now? Where does God fit? I'm going to be honest. I've had to work at making Him fit in the big circle. Because we live in a world that teaches us things. We can click a button. It's pretty cool that we can do this. I wish we could have done this when I was a kid. Click a button and have something at your house in 2 days. I think they're fighting to see who can get to your house in 1 day now. That's pretty cool. But as many things as we can get to our home in 2 days, God still better have the big circle. Is He the center of our heart? Do we give Him the greatest? Do we remember, in the end, God has made a place for our souls? Right now, if we were to die today, we're living for one of those two places. I've said this before, and I'm afraid we're straddling the wide and the narrow. We can't live in both. We're never going to be perfect, but the Bible teaches us, Peter tells us, to strive for perfection. Sometimes when I think about the internal punishment that comes, I'm a history buff, I research like crazy, so I'm one of those nerdy people, you'll have to forgive me. But this place fascinates me. It's a city in Pennsylvania. In 1962, a fire erupted under the ground. 1,200 residents in this little bitty Pennsylvania city. Nobody knew what happened. 15 different federal, state, local agencies have spent over $4 million trying to stop that fire, and it's still going today. And this is what someone who lives in that city says. "Standing by a hole, you can hear the fire's roaring. It's an eerie sound like the beating of 1,000 wings. People have left the city because the heat, just from being around it, is terrible. The sound, the noises. I'm here to tell you that that don't even compare to what hell is going to be like. The eternal punishment that we will face if we don't get our life right with God." Jesus warned us in Luke 12, verse 4, of a far greater eternal fire. "And I say to you, my friends, do not be afraid of those who kill the body and after that have no more that they can do. But I will show you whom you should fear. Fear him who, after he is killed, has power to cast you into hell. Yes, I say to you, fear him." I had trouble understanding this fear when I was a little kid. But today I liken it to my fear of snakes. Okay, snakes just, I can't even say the word. I respect them because I know what they do to the environment. There's good things, like good things that can be done. But I'm scared to death. You probably hear me screaming like a little girl, no offense, ladies, and running the other way. Because I know if I get too close and I do something I'm not supposed to do, it's going to get me. God's going to judge us. There's a place waiting. What value is your soul? Turn to Philippians chapter 4. If this were my last sermon, because I realized my life was about to end, I would encourage you to remember that Jesus is the answer to all things. Now, I hesitate to put this point in there. I've reworded it because we hear this a lot, right? From everyone. Everybody says this. Used to wear bracelets. Everything about, what would Jesus do? But it's true. It's the one common thing we have with other people. This verse, Philippians 4, verse 13, gives me hope. And I think of Paul who said this. Paul, who was at beaten, it says, three times with the rods. You know, the Romans did their math. They practiced. They knew exactly how many times they could beat someone and it would kill them. 41 times is what they said. We kill somebody the way they beat people. Paul says, I can take those beatings because Christ strengthens me. He went another place, I think it's 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1. He says, imitate me as I imitate Christ. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. In 1 Corinthians, the 15th chapter, he also tells us in verse 54 through 57, through Christ we have the victory. Through Christ we have that victory. So when this corruptible has put on incorruption and this mortal has put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is your saying? O Hades, where is your victory? The sting of death is sin, and the strength of sin is the law. But thanks be to God who gives us the victory through your Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast. One of my favorite passages reminds me of what I need to do. Be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. As I read this, I'm mindful of another story I use from time to time. A boy and his father in a car, windows down, nice cool day. The boy is extremely allergic to bees. I mean, so allergic, it will put him in the hospital, maybe kill him. I had a kid not too long ago in my class that was very allergic to them. They're driving down on a nice summer day, a bee flies into the car. The boy starts freaking out. The father just gently puts his hand out, lets the bee land in his hand, and closes his hand. He took the sting. I'm not going to read this. We all know these passages. John 19, that's another lesson. The scourging. Whips with bone and metal in them, ripping his skin. Crowns of thorn pushed on his head. People mocking him. Mark's passage talks about the mocking. The pain's bad enough, but the mocking. Spat up on him. Struck him on the head. He took the sting for us so we would not have to. I love the word steadfast. There's so many synonyms that Google can't even fit it on its first search engine. It's for steadfast. Loyal, faithful, committed, devoted. Is that us? You know, there's two things I can't imagine. I can't imagine missing out on heaven. And I can't imagine what it's going to be like. That's kind of a double negative, right? Someday, we will get to see that, hopefully. If we remember to turn to Jesus. Turn to God. To Him to overcome, if we overcome this world, I will grant to sit with me in my throne, as also overcome and sat down with my Father on His throne. And then 1 John chapter 3. I apologize, I know I'm going fast, but I can talk all day and I don't want to speak to midnight like Paul, so I'm trying to rush through some of this. 1 John chapter 3, verse 2. Beloved, now our children of God, we are children of God, and it has not yet been revealed what shall be. But we know that when He is revealed, we shall be like Him, for we shall see Him as He is. And everyone who has his hope in Him purifies himself just as He is pure. Can you imagine someday getting to set and be with God? That brings me to my last point, and this will be really quick. We're all going to be judged. It's one thing I try to get not to happen as a teacher in school. I teach junior high, eighth grade. A lot of judging goes on, right? Bullying, judging. I work hard at making sure that doesn't happen. I know I can't stop it. But this is one judging we can't stop. It's going to happen. It's a reservation. It's an appointment. Hebrews 9, verse 27 says, "And it is appointed for me to die once, but after this is judgment." 2 Corinthians chapter 5. I'll let you read that. I'll let you turn to that and read that. But we make a reservation at a restaurant. We get sick. We can't go. We can cancel it. We have an appointment somewhere. We can't make it. We can cancel it. This is one we cannot cancel. Turn to Romans chapter 2. One thing that scares me is when I read the next two verses, because everything I've said or thought or done is going to be judged. Now, luckily, God allowed me to become a Christian. He had time for me. And luckily, as a Christian, I can go to God in prayer. I can ask for forgiveness. I can repent. Been reading the Old Testament in our daily reading, and there was a verse that just stuck in my head. And I'm going to paraphrase this badly, but it talks about David being perfect. Except for Uzzah. Or except for... I'm messing up there. Sorry. I told you I was going to paraphrase it badly. But he had a man killed because he sinned. He wanted his wife. But everything else he did perfect. Why was he perfect? New Testament says he was a man after God's own heart. He repented. He realized, I better change. The prophet Nathan told him, you need to change. This is you. And he changed. In Matthew the 12th chapter, verse 36, "But I say to you that every idle word men may speak, that they will give account of in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned." When's the last time we've asked God to forgive us? I don't know about you, but I pray when there's food. Thank goodness, I can eat. If you can't tell, I can eat. I pray when I go to bed. I pray when I get up in the morning. But as I've gotten older, I've found that praying happens pretty frequently. How often do we ask God for forgiveness? We always end, we hear prayers ended all the time. Forgive us for our sins. This is one judgment where I want to be convicted. If I were accused, I love documentaries, and we watched one where this person went to prison for something they didn't do. He never got freed. This is one judgment where I want the evidence to convict me that I'm worthy of going to heaven. We all know ourselves. I don't know you deep down inside. We know each other a little bit, right? Some of us better than others. But deep down inside, we know what we're doing and not doing. That verse there, we're almost done. Two more passages. This passage, one more. "Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down his life for his friends." I want to be friends with the judge, with God. It says, "You are my friends if you do whatever I command you." But every time I read this, I have a note in my Bible that says 1 John 5:3. Because 1 John 5:3 says, "And his commandments are not burdensome." Were we really excited to come worship this morning? Or was it something we just did because it's habitual? Or someone else is here that makes us do it? I remember used to be a young kid. I was playing sports and my mom was like, "Let's go." I'm like, "Okay." I smiled, but inside I was like, "Okay." So I want to end with that same preacher who was dying of cancer. He survived, by the way. He's still alive. Someone asked him, "What is the best advice?" So let's put ourselves in this spot. I think it's good to think about death every once in a while. Because it's going to happen. Death is going to happen. So someone who was not part of his family, a member of his congregation, asked him, "What is the best advice you can give to one who finds out that they have cancer?" What would you say? Here's what he said. "Prepare to meet God." He said, "Prepare to meet God." Here's part of the letter he wrote to his daughters. He says, "I want you to know that I've repented of all my sins, all my weaknesses and shortcomings. And so far as I know, he says, "I'm ready to go on and meet my God. I am a sinner. And I'm relying on God's mercy and goodness, not my own worthiness, to save me. Even now as I write this letter, I'm begging God to remember me for good as I anticipate departing from this life. As everyone knows, it is now completely in God's hands as to whether I will live any longer. I've often taught, and you've heard me say, this world is not our home. There is a world beyond that is far better than this one. May the great, eternal God reward all of us with it. It will only be our reward if we love Him and do His commandments. I am a firm believer that when someone tells you they love you, it's a question. I was lucky enough to grow up hearing someone, my mom and my grandmother, tell me all the time, every day. You know, when you're young kids, you kind of like, again? You know, you want to kiss again? I liked it. I'm just going to be honest. I was one of those boys. I love you. I love you all the time. My dad, who's a great guy, he's a great guy, but I think I can count on one hand how many times he told me. It hurt. It hurt. My boys are tired of me saying it sometimes. I say it all the time. First thing I say, last thing I say every time. Jesus told us He loved us, and He proved it with actions. We remembered it today. He went to the cross. He was hammered. He was nailed. He was spat upon. His head. He was hit on His head. And He said, "You're my friends if you keep my commandments." In this letter, He says, strive diligently to go to heaven. If you're not a Christian today, you can become one. We had a great service last week. I was honored to be here to see a soul baptized, a person baptized. Remain faithful. It's hard. It's not easy, but we have each other to help, right? We should. That's why it's important who you choose to spend the rest of your life with. Make sure it's someone who can help you do that. Because I'm not sure I'd be here today if I didn't choose someone who could help me do that. Always go to God. Communicate. You have a boyfriend, girlfriend, or you're married, try not talking to them for a while. What happens? Falls apart. God wants us to talk to Him, but the key is in humility. God, you're greater than me. Do we spend more time asking for this, this, and this, or do we praise God and thank Him for what He's given? Rely solely on God. Remember His mercy, His long-suffering, and His goodness. And then don't give up. Give in and give out. I still remember at a congregation I attended when I first moved here, a gentleman that was 103 years old, know who I'm talking about, would stand at the door. He never gave up. There was other members that like, I'm going to let the young people do it. His prayers were, I clocked it one time. There was an 8-minute, 32-second prayer one time. I'm probably thinking his sermon's going on right now too, so maybe this is my last one. But he never gave up. Till the day he died, he never gave up. So don't give up, don't give in. If you're not a Christian this morning and we can help you become one, please come as we stand and as we sing. Share the soul.